I love all the yellow that I've seen today, and I almost, well, I thought about wearing yellow. And the truth is, I'm not going to show you guys from here, but I do have a yellow t-shirt. I've shown a few people. Look, I've got yellow on. I'm secretly yellow. It's really a wonderful pleasure to be a part of our community, our family, and be part of this Easter celebration. There was a day recently at work when I walked past the front office and I heard Terry, who's our health unit coordinator. I work in a hospital. She was on the phone with a prospective patient, and I heard her say, "Do you have any physical limitations?" Now, this is an appropriate question. We provide addiction treatment services. We need to know if you use a walker, if you have a peg leg, if there aren't that many of those around. But we want to know about constraints on participation and so forth. But because I was getting ready for Easter, I was thinking about my talk when I heard Terry ask, "Do you have any physical limitations?" I imagined, what if a caller said, "Well, no, not really. I am free. I am unlimited. I mean, I'm one with God, and God is a circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. So that is God, myself, I mean, no less than yourself. God exists in the tiniest subatomic particles and easily bridges the gap between our planet and the Andromeda galaxy almost 3 million light years away. So in short, no, I have no physical limitations." What's your next question? Now, we study, we contemplate, we engage with a teaching that says all this I just spoke about is actually the truth. It's actually what's true about us. But if a caller had answered Terry with what I just said, it's likely she would have been put on hold. And Terry would have contacted our program director, a really thoughtful, spiritually oriented man who I know is in church right now. He's on call all this weekend, and his note to everyone was, "I'm on call. If I'm slow to get back to you, I'll be in church a lot this weekend." He's one of those guys. But I think the call would have gone to him, and it's possible that the caller would have been invited to participate in a higher level of care than we offer, perhaps being transported in a padded ambulance. On one level, we know this truth, that we are not our bodies, and that while we're embedded in time and space like a fly in amber, this is only a superficial aspect of who we really are. We know this on one level. But I suspect that for most of us, our embodied experience is the sense that we are limited. We're bound by our obligations and our constraints, that there are many chains that bind us. We're mired in the aging process, living in fear and worry about what may come next, at least some of the time. We're on the mortality merry-go-round. We're captive on a carousel of time. We don't remember exactly when we got on. We're wondering about and half dreading some unknown moment when we all will leave the ride. Speaking of a fly in amber, this dilemma I'm talking about here of being caught in an earthly aging body with all its limits reminds me of a cartoon I once saw which had the title Mayfly Midlife Crisis. In the cartoon, we see a mayfly staring deeply into his own little compound eyes in the bathroom mirror. He's preparing to shave his minuscule insect beard. And he's saying, "Look at me.
I've got a job, a wife, kids, a mortgage. How did this ever happen? For crying out loud, I'm 2 weeks old already. As spring has been unfurling this year and as we've prepared for Easter, I've been particularly aware of my connection to this beautiful planet, the rebirth of life in the woods nearby, in the garden beds. I've picked and I've cooked nettles and kale. Nah, the truth is I just eat the kale. I'm almost get on the ground and munch it right off the plants. I love that stuff. I've wandered through the woods, locating, photographing trilliums. I've been assaulted by the pungent and not entirely unpleasant scent of skunk cabbage. Not entirely unpleasant, though I doubt we'll see it as a designer fragrance anytime soon. All this nature makes me think of the ever-present pagan roots of our celebration. The very word Easter is said to be taken from the name of a Germanic spring goddess and has a meaning related to luminescence, light, dawn. The earth feels like it's being reborn, and we might feel to some extent like a rebirth happens for us and to us in the spring. I usually do. Imagine what it was like, of course, for our ancestors living these agricultural lives when the spring came around and they had made it through the winter on whatever food stores, right? Amazon Fresh was not delivering. And they would be able to plant and find some green things to eat. Spring returning, it's a big deal. And it's no wonder that on the level of born-again pagan, this holiday totally rings our chimes. But of course, Easter is about something aside from the reawakening of the earth's spirit and rhythms. It's about a kind of dialogue with the experience of death and the possibility of resurrection. When the Gospels were written down, they recorded the tradition that had been passed from speaker to hearer to community for about 70 years. A tradition that said that women, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James, and that is also Jesus' mother among others, depends on whose account you read, that these women came to Jesus' tomb on the third day after the crucifixion, and they found the tomb empty. And they encountered a man dressed in clothes that shone like lightning. And he told them, "Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus. He is not here. He is risen." I'm not taking any calls right now. If you start to study all that has been taught and the various sources and the texts and the interpretations of what happened at that tomb and in the days following, well, this is the work of many lifetimes. There's theories, there's studies, hypotheses, interpretations. Jesus rose bodily from the dead. Jesus wasn't actually buried in the tomb the women went to, but was buried somewhere else. Jesus was only in a coma and left the burial place on his own. This is called the swoon hypothesis. Ultimately, I don't know the truth of the Jesus story, of his resurrection, the visionary appearances, the ascension. I do want to note in passing that it happened to be women who found the empty tomb. And the sources say that the resurrected Christ first revealed himself to Mary Magdalene. So to all the guys here, I feel I should say this. If you're not listening to the women in your life, you're probably missing something. (Laughter) Easter. See, I got half the crowd on my side. Easter, after all, I'll remind you again, was named after a goddess. Perhaps, though, the true meaning of Easter is not the fruit of deliberation and study, not some worked-out intellectual construct. That would be good news, for me at least, because when I try to come to definite conclusions about these matter of the spirit, my brain ends up defeated. Turns out I cannot actually figure out God and Jesus and the resurrection. As smart as I sometimes imagine I am, I'm not actually equal intellectually to the task of decoding this puzzle. I can only apprehend dimly a truth I feel certain of, that we are not, or we are not only, these frail and temporary vessels our spirits are lodged in this moment. There is some journey beyond our temporal and tangible existence. There is some mystery that we are not able to completely pierce the veil of. And though we cling to this life, which feels like our only experience of being, we may find at some point, presumably at the death of our earthly bodies, we may find a connection, a relationship, an experience of something far beyond all we have imagined, that we may in fact realize in a complete way our oneness with the spirit and creator of this universe, that we may become one with God, that we may simply fly away. It's said that the moment of death is a gateway. And it may be that we have some kind of physical resurrection or whatever hypothesis you would care to bank on. I doubt it matters what picture we summon up of what will happen then or later. I suspect, though, it does matter how we work on our own consciousness right now, in order to be more ready to go through whatever that transition is. What so many sages teach is that when we pray or when we meditate, it is as if we are practicing, rehearsing our consciousness for the moment of death. It's said that Gandhi constantly had the mantra Ram, Ram in his thoughts. And that when he was assassinated in 1948 by a Hindu nationalist, his last word was not why or no or stop, but Ram, a name for God. It's like something I once saw in a documentary about George Harrison. He had written out a mantra on a piece of paper as if it was a recipe. And at the bottom of the paper was this instruction: repeat until death. I'd like to mention one other personal story that might be a final thread in my little weaving today. Woving? I've got a new word. Write that down. I think this story could stand in for the difficulty that any of us might have with this very high-minded idea of going beyond death, of death being a doorway, of death not mattering. One night last fall, Sally and I had a plan to meet for dinner with our friend Caitlin, who was then, at that point, our roommate as well. Caitlin called me as I was driving home and said she'd expected to meet Sal at home, but she wasn't there. Did I know anything about what she was doing? She called, but she hadn't gotten an answer. I called Sally myself, no answer. I texted her, nothing. I emailed her, nope. I called again, text, email, rinse, repeat, my worry level up and up and up. I drove back over to our house to see if maybe her car had broken down on the road. Maybe she'd forgotten her phone at the house. I was clutching at straws. It's amazing, isn't it? Now that we all have our personal communicators, although I want the one that's right on the chest, you know, Star Trek style. Did you know they've invented a tricorder, by the way? Yeah, some guys won a prize by coming up with this thing in their garage. Regardless, with these communicators, we expect always to be in touch. Finally, Sally called me back. I've forgotten what happened. Maybe she was on her phone in a call to another person, a friend that she hadn't talked to for a long time, or maybe she'd gone into a store and left the phone in her car and just lost track of the time. I don't know, some irresponsible thing she did. Maybe she'd been abducted by aliens again. Ultimately, though, I was reassured. Oh, my wife and my partner is whole, and we set a new time to meet at the restaurant. Not before, though, I had constructed a whole alternate reality in my head. You've heard of alternate facts. I had a bunch of alternate facts in my head, in which Sal and her phone had somehow transitioned to that place beyond living in the body. I was imagining, oh my God, she's gone, and she's never coming home again, and that's why the message isn't going through. And I thought, man, I am really imaginative and skilled at completely freaking myself out. I learned a lot of that in my family growing up. But I was also asking myself, if that happened, how would I carry on? Could I possibly come up here and talk about how death is not the all-powerful factor and that we can and must and will go beyond death to an experience of some kind of resurrection or rebirth into another state? If Sally had just recently departed, as we say, I concluded, yeah, I'd probably get over that in about 20 minutes. I'd be good to go. Yeah. In truth, it would take at least 30 minutes. That was a joke, too. Seriously, as you could expect, it would be the hardest thing imaginable. I would have not been able to carry on very well for a long time. In some ways, I'm sure I would never be the same person I am right now. It brought home to me in a way that I probably couldn't see otherwise how very difficult these things are to experience and live through. These things that may fall glibly off our tongues, these ideas of transcending death and being connected to the resurrected Christ, these are things we speak of, but to live through them, to be present with all that grief and uncertainty, is truly a crucible of the Spirit that I don't particularly invite and which I suspect will someday be part of my experience, or something similar will. And it is a part of what our lives ideally may in fact be a preparation for. In closing, I want to ask you, do you have any physical limitations? And I guess you would have to answer me in saying that of course you do, and I do too. We are limited in space, and we are certainly limited in time. But here's the kicker. We do indeed have physical limitations, but God has no physical limitations. And while we are limited in time, God has no temporal limitations. God is not in time and space. Time and space are in God. So our invitation is to more and more, as we practice on our own spiritual paths, identify and connect with not our pet peeves, our petty preferences, and our selfish natures, all of which I could give a series of talks about, speaking personally, but to connect with this transcendent, resilient, and resurrected spirit that is, in fact, always available to us. And to let that spirit of Easter, of the light of a new dawn, illuminate us today and every day as we prepare someday at an hour no one knows, like the risen Christ, to simply fly away. Thank you.